Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi there, I'm Brian Abana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Podcast.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to this week's Mall Over Podcast. The only rugby podcast that gives you all the news, the views and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Mall Over Podcast, Mall Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook. And you can find all of our content as well as none of other stuff on... I nearly said ruck.co.uk then. That's been a while, hasn't it?
Been a while.
It's been a while since we appeared on there. We're on Anchor and we're on Apple Podcasts and the Google Store and all that sort of stuff. Been quite good at the intro recently and balls that one right up. Disappointed in myself. You've already heard the world famous Chinese lensman. Welcome, Doug.
Now then.
And the nicest Cornish Rugby Podcast in Ben. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Russ.
You well? Hi, you both well?
Well, I've just been beaten up by an osteopath, so I've been better.
Osteopath? That's what you know. That's not just back. Is a chiropractor, isn't it?
You've got a fat back.
What does a osteopath do, Doug?
I think I've got sciatica at the moment or some such disease, so I'm trying to get it rectified. And he's doing it by inflicting physical harm upon my body.
I mean, have you tried going on a rack?
No, because I don't live in the 1400s and I'm not being tortured.
Yeah, but it might stretch you out a little bit, make you a little bit taller.
Well, that's like saying, have you ever tried using a steak tenderizer to stop being so fucking fat?
I mean... I'm not sure how that would work, but you know,
it's quite simple, Russ. You get you and a steak tenderizer and you twat your belly until you're not fat anymore.
Like knocking in a cricket bat.
Surely it would be the reverse of knocking in a cricket bat. Because you're trying to make it hard rather than soften it down. I don't know. I mean, it's taken a dark turn already, isn't it?
Let's not go there.
Right. Another spectacular week for Premiership rugby. But I reckon we should sort of change tack a little bit. And should we start in a championship?
I don't know if any of you would have picked this up. But during the Quinns Saints game, the first penalty that Northampton gave away was Nick Ezekwe. And Joe Marler, I quite clearly heard shout to him, "You've got the Pirates on the brain, Nick."
He got the Pirates on the brain. I mean, Joe Marler, our thoughts on Joe Marler are pretty well documented.
But he took shithousery to the next level during that game. I've never seen anything like it.
Do we need to wait or do we go? We're going to talk about the Pirates.
The amount of times that he tried to undo some, this just things I noticed from my camera. He tried to undo someone's shoelaces while he was pinned in a ruck. He stroked Nick Autorak's hair while he was in a ruck, like tenderly stroked his hair. He chirped the whole game. I mean, you'd just want to paste him if you were on the pitch with him.
And we're, you know, brave enough. It's not something I would advise, but you know, he's just a bit of an arse, isn't he, in general?
I think that's a fair summation.
It's okay though, because he's Joe Marler, banter, great.
And he's banter man.
The driver of the banter bus.
Yeah.
Okay, the driver, the conductor. Anyway, what I was going to say is I wanted to congratulate the Cornish Pirates on what is an incredible victory over a team called Saracens.
I don't know if any of you know much about them. There are recently established championship side that do have, you know, players from all over the world that were, by all accounts, absolutely humbled at the Menai Field, a place that Ben and I know very well. We've both graced that hallowed turf in many a second team game over the years. And it's not an easy place to play, Ben, is it? Like, no matter who you're playing against.
Well, I don't know how they managed to get there on a day when it wasn't raining, because I've never managed it yet.
Yeah, agree.
But yeah, it's not what they're used to, is it? I mean, someone said they've probably blown the roof off the stand, but I imagine that's probably been done a few times over the winter anyway. But yeah, it's... well, there's nothing between Penzance and America, but a lot of ocean, is there? So you do get the weather there.
Yeah.
And it's quite a damp old pitch, isn't it?
It's just a horrible, horrible place to play rugby.
I wonder if they played on the second team pitch with all the bricks in it.
Oh, the one at the back.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a hidden gem.
I'd love it if they'd done that to Saracens. It's like, come on, boys. First team pitch. They're still playing cricket on the first team pitch. Let's go out the second team pitch.
Amazing.
Probably not playing a lot of cricket in February, to be fair, but
no. But the result is obviously shocked everyone. Saracens turned up with no fewer than, I think it was 6 or 7 international players, and basically got scrum and set pieced off the park. And, you know, I think Saracens are going to learn very, very quickly. And Doug, I think you alluded to it on Twitter, that every single game for Saracens opponents is a cup final. And they are going to have to... that the team that Saracens put out on Saturday beat Premiership teams last season.
Yep.
In the absence of, you know, your Itojis and your... and your Farrells and your Dailies and whoever else, you know, Sashino, Maitland, Vunipola, Cock, Swinson, Rhodes, Jackson Ray, Lewington, Duncan Taylor, you know, that's a solid Premiership side, isn't it? That'll probably go out and beat Worcester at the weekend.
Absolutely.
But I
just think there's a difference between, and people are saying that Newcastle last year, their first match of the season was, you know, a bit of a struggle, and they didn't really get going and they underestimated the opposition. But I think that there really is another sort of 20% that these Champo lads are going to put in, because it is Saracens and it's different than playing Newcastle. It's, you know, a lot of those players that play for Newcastle probably played in other Championship squads. Vincent Cock won the World Cup last year.
Yeah.
You know, there's a marked difference between the usual Premiership relegation fodder. Sorry?
He got pushed all over the field.
Yeah. Well, look, and they're better players, so they should adapt and they should be able to, you know, change the way they play to play against Championship opposition. But I just think the intensity that the Championship teams will bring to those Saracens games will be another level to what they've ever done before. And Pirates may legitimately be very good. I would imagine that Saracens games are going to be against Pirates, Jersey, Ealing, and maybe Coventry. They might get a game against Coventry. The rest, I think they'll breeze through. But 4 or 5 games, definitely, they're going to be in with the shout. And wouldn't it be brilliant, like, if everyone just got together and just let Ealing win every game by bonus point, you know?
Yeah.
And
I'm just looking
at it. Ultimately, though, Russ, it's set up so Saracens get promoted, because it doesn't matter what happens during the season, there's a playoff.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But sure, isn't it just they've got to get into that top two playoff first, haven't they? I mean, again, how low?
I mean, it'd be a miracle for them not to make the top two, right? It would be a miracle.
Absolutely. Absolutely, it would. But, you know, they've got 10 their fixtures, they've only got 10 more or 10 games over the season, haven't they? it's a curtailed season. They're not playing everybody twice. It's not a. It's not like oh yeah, well we'll have that go again. They've got Jersey, then Richmond, Bedford, Doncaster, Ealing, Nottingham, Ampthill, Coventry, Hartbury. Now, I mean, chances are that they win all of those handsomely and potentially get a game against Ealing. But, you know, if it does come down to it, they're going to need all of their superstars back if they do make that playoff. And it's not like they've got 20 games to just get into their stride, I mean, and blow them away.
Realistically, you'd think because the other teams are going to beat each other, you would suggest that they would need to lose another two games to
not make it.
Struggle to make the playoff.
Yeah, potentially. But how nice would it be if a couple of teams went, you know
what? Oh, mate, I'd piss my pants if they... Just the... How Premiership Rugby would go about convoluting a way to get them back. You know, so whoever wins that playoff, if Saracens weren't in it, there would be something along the lines of, well, your ground's not good enough, you can't come up. And because you didn't declare that you were ground sharing with someone, you know, and the only team that can fulfill that space is, and so they're coming up. Deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, or we just make it 14 teams and Ealing can come in as well and we'll just open it all up.
Or the Pirates. God, I'd love it if the Pirates came up.
So it won't be next season because they won't have anywhere to play unless they find something in the short term.
Share with Argyle or something.
That is potentially it. And if they could do that for a season, because I have read in the press locally,
are there no Cornish
semi-pro
football team?
Truro City, and they haven't even got anywhere to play. Right. But I have read in the press that the family who own Cornish Pirates, Dickie Evans, Ben.
Yeah.
Dickie Evans.
Yeah.
I've read somewhere that they're getting fed up of this whole Stadium for Cornwall bullshit that's been on for God knows how long. And they're looking very much, very seriously into the Edinburgh rugby model, where they built that stadium for about 5.7 million.
And it's basically just scaffold.
Yeah. But it potentially could get them into line to be Premiership worthy. And if that's the case, then, you know, fair play to them. But we'll have to wait and see. Who knows what's going to happen about that. But an amazing start to the Championship season. Huge congratulations to Gavin Cattle and Alan Paver. I don't know if I ever told the story when I lived. Did I ever tell the story when I lived with the few of the Pirates lads for a couple of months? Never have I felt more inadequate in my entire life.
I was going to say, I bet you made a lot of tea, didn't you?
Yeah. It was it there. So back in 2007, in between when I left the RAF and before I found somewhere to live, I moved in with them because at the time my missus's best friend was going out with and I live with cats. Crackers, that's how I kind of met Chris Cracknell, Tim Cowley, amongst others. And that was when the Pirates won.
Is Chris Cracknell still with San Diego?
No, he owns and runs a coffee shop now and does some consultancy stuff, according to LinkedIn. But yeah, he doesn't do any San Diego stuff. Henley, I want to say Henley. But yeah, so but that was fun, you know. We went to we watched them in the the EDF Cup, it was the Championship Cup at the time, and they ironically beat the Exeter Chiefs in the final of that competition at Twickenham, ahead of what was the final of the Anglo-Welsh Cup. I think Leicester played the Ospreys in the final following that, and the Pirates won, and we just went out on a massive bender for about 3 days. It was amazing. And yeah, it was just great fun, great days. And I'm delighted for Katz because he's a good bloke. So yeah, let's move on from the Pirates and their fantastic victory over Saracens and get back into the Premiership.
We were asked to give tenuous links to any of the squad, and I'm just having a look and I can't think of any really.
It's because they're all. It's because they're all so like young now, isn't it? That was a tenuous link to the coaching staff, I suppose.
Yeah, but I was just having a look at the squad just to see if there was anyone I know. But what is quite nice about the sort of squad is they look like any first team that could rock up at any level. There's like the number eight with the big beard,
yeah,
and the like young lad with the sort of curly mop. They just look like sort of any first team that could walk into any clubhouse. Whereas Premiership teams don't tend to look like that, do they? They're all quite similar looking. Couple of what you would call traditional props, I'd say.
What, round with beards?
Yes. Yeah. Beards very much an option. There's the official photographer looks like he might be 409 years old. So, good win for old school rugby, I reckon.
Yeah. The other one that was on the commentary on Saturday, a guy called Rodri McAtee, who I played against a couple of times when he was at Pirates. In the end of his career, he played for Pirates Amateurs. And at my last comeback, I think it was probably my third or fourth comeback, I played a game at fullback for Hornets. And he was a winger. He played for Wales Sevens, was a World Cup Sevens winner, Rodri McAtee, with Wales. And he came down the wing. I was playing fullback. And I just thought, well, use the touchline. You know, between you and the touchline, it's a long way round. You know, it'll be fine.
It would be a long way round you then and all.
Yeah, well, no, this was more recently.
Record scratch. Yeah. It was not fine.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It absolutely was not fine.
At this point, and, Russ knew he'd fucked up.
Yeah. And it was the point where, you know, when you kind of slow your run down because you're trying to use the touchline, you're trying to arrive at a similar time to use the touchline. And all he did was, as I slowed down, he slowed down. And as he sped up, I couldn't speed up. I didn't have the ability to speed up, and he just ran straight past me down the wing. And it was like, oh, you know, when you do like a real vain attempt at a tap tackle as someone's ran past you just to make it look like you've done something.
It's just so you don't have to chase them, isn't it?
Yeah, fucking hell. It was at that exact moment that I realized, what are you doing here, mate? You are an absolute fat mess. You're a joke. Right. Anyway, enough about me. As much as I enjoy talking about me, let's talk about, let's go to Sale on Friday night. Doug, you were working at Sale on Friday night for Sale against Newcastle. Talking of Cornish links, another of the Matavesi brothers coming off the bench and scoring a try on his debut.
I've been trying to work out which one that was.
Joel Matavesi. Was he off the bench, or I think he came off the bench?
I think he came off the bench, yeah, because Josh played there as well, didn't he?
Josh played it. They were together at Newcastle for a little while. Yeah.
Because it was weird, because I thought it was Josh that had scored, and then when I got to Wasps the following day and they were playing whoever they were playing, who were they playing?
Exeter Bath.
While the Wasps game was on my iPad, just down to the left of me, I had the Bath game on. So when, you know, there was injuries or whatever, I could just glance down and see what was happening. And then Matavesi, I think, did something in that game. And I was
nice, the lovely little offload.
He signed and playing again today. How's that work?
I remembered.
Yeah.
There's loads of them.
Wasn't as good a story as I thought it was.
There's three of them. But Joel, I think.
Sam's playing for Saints.
Yes. Yeah. Sam's a hooker in the Navy. Josh is probably the most well-known of the three. He's been around, you know, he's had a lot of clubs.
How Fijian and how Cornish are they?
Well, their dad, Sorelli, is Fijian, and they were born and raised in Camborne.
Camborne, yeah.
So you know, they're to all intents and purposes English.
Well, yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I believe they were born
with Fijian passports or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, their dad was.
So what I'm saying is they could have played for England.
Yeah, I assume that was an option at some point. But like Josh has played for, he played for Racing, didn't he? And he's played for
Played in Wales for a long time.
Played in Wales at the Ospreys. He played for Newcastle, for Bath. He was at Exeter for a while.
Get them starting on fees, mate.
Mate, he's had a stellar career. He's done very, very well for himself. And he's a good player.
Played in the World Cup.
Yeah. I mean, we're slightly off track, but he's proper old school, sort of 12, but with incredible ball skills as well. And
I think he's basically a big 10, isn't he?
He's a big 10. And if there's one subject I know quite a bit about, it's being a big 10.
Yep.
Anyway, let's go back to Sale. They beat Newcastle. Doug, anything stand out for you on Friday night up in Manchester?
I don't think Sale are very good. I think I mean, when I say I don't think they're very good, I think they're good enough to compete at the top half of the Premiership because they've got huge, massive, blunt weapons. But I don't think they're good enough to beat Bristol or Gloucester. Bristol, they're certainly good enough to beat Gloucester. I don't think they're good enough to beat Exeter or Bristol when it comes to the crunch games, really.
They beat Exeter last week, didn't they?
I'm talking about crunch games, like playoff games being a dick. Obviously, they've got players out. I think if they had Manu and Van Rensburg in the centres, they'd be a much better team. I don't buy the AJ McGinty hype. I think he's pretty average, to be honest. I mean, that thing, the offload he did on the touchline for the try was incredible. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
And that was incredible, but he doesn't inspire me. He's a bit of a Northampton fly half for me. You know, Dan Bigg is a bit too good for us. If they swapped, then that would make more sense. Their forwards are okay. They're all massive. Jono Ross is
South
decent.
African.
But they beat a team that never got off the bus, really, and that hadn't played for 3 weeks. So we're probably a bit undercooked.
Yeah.
And they made really hard work of it. It felt like they were running in treacle at times. It was...
I don't think they're very good.
I honestly don't think they're very good.
Fair enough.
I think they're one-dimensional.
Do you think Alex Anderson's having much of an impact up there? Or is he just continuing?
Look, they had a couple of defensive sets that were incredible. But again, Newcastle were very much undercooked. They had a couple of defensive sets where they drove Newcastle backwards from Sale's 10-metre line to well inside Newcastle's half. Just with line speed, that similar sort of defensive structure that Saracens would run with the sort of out-to-in blitz.
Yeah.
So once you get to centre, there's nowhere for the centre to go. So there's quite a lot of times where the centre would receive the ball, much like Northampton did on Saturday once Harlequins had adjusted. Sort of the centre would get the ball or second receiver would get the ball, look to make the next pass, but couldn't because the fan had sort of shut it off. So we'd have to turn back inside. So that's, I think, one clear impact that he's having. I've chosen not to engage in his pre and post match interviews because they just annoy me too much.
Probably for the best.
Yeah. They may well finish top four. Now Saracen's clear salary cap breaches have been exposed. The league is so even now. There isn't a team so far away ahead of everyone else. And that's why you're seeing these, you know, Wasps losing four in a row, Saints winning four in a row, Bath losing and looking terrible, then smashing three games in a row, Chiefs losing. The parity is there. So you're going to week, you're going to have swings of teams looking good and teams looking not good. Newcastle didn't look good this week, haven't played for 3 weeks. Sale looked okay. They've been on a run of good results. I don't think they'll win the league.
You've touched on something there around the evenness of the league as it stands at the moment. And And even even last season, whilst Saracens were going through the motions, Exeter were formidable. And you wonder how much of last season took out of Exeter with what's going through this season. And you know, it's almost to the point was actually, you know, how much do we, probably the wrong thing to say, how much do we need to put into this season just to make the top four? Because ultimately, you just need to make the top four. And yeah, I don't think there's any doubt Exeter will. And, you know, Bristol will be there. And then there'll be a bit of a battle royale for the last two places. But, you know, looking at the results for Exeter, like you say, Bath have lost a lot and then won three on the bounce. Wasps are in and out. Leicester, 1 week looked like world beaters. Leicester on, literally, since the turn of the year, they've gone one loss, one loss, one loss, one. So, like, they're a week on, week off. You know, then you've got Gloucester and Worcester. I said Worcester were looking all right, but they've lost, like, 10 in a row, nearly. And it's all very much anyone can and will beat anyone. And you literally, you wouldn't like to put on any hackers on the Premiership at the moment, would you? Because the likelihood is you would lose every single time.
Absolutely.
Go on.
No. I mean, you basically said what I think. It's parity is what parity is. You know, this is what the league's going to be like for the foreseeable future, because no team is gaming the system at the moment.
But then that's surely, I mean, for me, I'd rather it be like that. I'd rather watch rugby not knowing who's going to win than have the same old, you know, oh, it's Exeter this, it's Saracens that.
At least it makes the NFL works. It's why the NFL works, because you've got 32 teams that all buy into a salary cap. There's a minimum spend and a maximum spend. So you're only ever going to be so shit and you're only ever going to be so good. And what that means is you go into every single year as a fan of any one of the 32 teams, you've got just as much chance of winning as everyone else. There's a few factors that go into it. And I think that's where we're getting to with the Premiership. We have a few outliers, such as Worcester, who probably can't spend as much, but seem like they're up in what they are spending. And Bristol, who seem, you know, bordering on. We'll see what they do in the summer, but they seem to find these players. Like, where's Nualango come from?
Nualango, he's an army bod, isn't
yeah.
he?
I didn't even realize. I mean, why are the army not in the Premiership?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, imagine a combined services, like a regular combined services team. Remember how good the combined services used to be?
Yeah.
Amazing. Unbelievable, really. You touched on Worcester there briefly. I think, like, they're making some sign-ins and they're showing some intent, hopefully, for next season. And I can't remember whether we talked about this last week or not. But do you think the threat of no relegation is going to financially help these clubs? So, for instance, let's look at, like, as we stand today, Gloucester, Worcester, Bath are the bottom three. Worcester can now legitimately go out and spend money and go, you know what, well, we're going to go and recruit properly for X, Y, and Z, because there's no threat of relegation. Therefore, we can say we're definitely going to be in the Premiership. There's no threat of people coming, or I don't really want to come because you might be in the Championship next season. And do you think that will make a more even playing field when it comes to recruitment for clubs like Worcester?
Maybe I don't like it as an argument to stop relegation.
No. I'm not using it as that. But what I'm saying is, for this season especially, as far as strengthening your squads go, you know, surely it would make sense to approach it in that way and look for more marquee recruitment in a year where there's definitely no relegation.
Potentially. Potentially. I mean, they've signed Scott Baldwin, if you can call that marquee.
Well, yeah. But I was Ashton as well. They would have spent a fair amount of money on Chris Ashton. I mean, for me, Chris Ashton is done. You only got to see the impact he had at Harlequins and the impact he had at Sale to realise that since he's come back from Toulon, he's been pretty average, isn't he? Let's be honest. But he's going to come. He's going to take up a bit of salary cap. That's for certain. Ben, have you got any thoughts on
Not really.
Okay, mate, we'll just move on.
I don't really know the answer, so...
Thanks for coming, Ben.
That's fair enough. I mean, there isn't an answer, is there? It was just an observation that, you know, if Worcester want to be serious about staying in the league next season, Saracens are obviously going to be back.
I suppose you can't really just go up to a player and sort of say, come to us this year, we're definitely not going to get relegated this time. Well, still not a, but, not a but, great
but
look,
think,
is it?
But I think you can, because how then do you attract the better caliber of player when you are on the threat of relegation?
Crap, but there's less risk of this time. It's probably not the message you want to be giving to a new signing, I would imagine.
Oh, give us a season. Give us five good games. Put yourself in a shot window.
Come to us. You definitely won't get relegated and you might end up playing for Saracens.
I mean, it's worse recruitment policies. Right. I didn't watch any of Leicester versus London Irish on Friday. I know there were some cards. Heptema got redded, I think, of all of the ones that I've seen for these high tackles and headshots. That was probably one of the most obvious ones. I don't know if either of you two have seen it. It was very...
But I have not seen it, but I have heard that it was pretty grim.
Yeah, I mean, grim is probably a bit much. You know, Austin Healey, obviously it was against Leicester, so he had a massive hard-on over it. And, you know, it was a high tackle where he stood up and put his shoulder into his face. So at pace. So, you know, 5 years ago, you know, it's a difficult one, but it was definitely a red card. I just, you know, it was more obvious than the load of the other ones. And then London Irish managed to get themselves back into the game or back in for a losing bonus point after Van Poortvliet gave away a penalty try and then a yellow card. And then Joe Hayes got a yellow card in the 80th minute for a high tackle that was borderline. But it did allow London Irish to back in to get a losing bonus point. On Saturday, right, Saturday, Bath versus Exeter. Ben, for 20 minutes, Bath carried on their good form of the three previous weeks. And then kind of fell apart at the seams a little bit. I mean...
Yeah, a little bit. They played really well for the first 20 minutes. And then they probably played pretty well for the next 40 minutes and then really fell apart in the last sort of 20. It did kind of coincide with Underhill going off. And as soon as he went off, they started to get a bit out-muscled. I'm not saying that was the only reason for it, but he does make a difference.
Yeah.
I mean, Miles Reid came on, who's been playing really well. And, you know, it's no slight on him to say he's not quite Sam Underhill yet.
But he is arguably one of the ugliest rugby players. Somebody put a comparison of him and who was it? Was it a radio DJ or something in the More Over Invitational Twitter group? Somebody, Gemma Kearney. Was it Gemma Kearney, the Radio 1 presenter? I don't know. Radio 1. I stopped listening to Radio 1 about 10 years ago. So,
but yeah, I mean, he can't help that. But he's a good rugby player. But yeah, But, you know, Bath, they were able to stretch Exeter a lot.
Ben, I think Mabel has found her way into your kitchen, and she with a cowbell on.
It's Duke. He's got a metal tag, and when he has a drink on his bowl, it does create a racket.
I genuinely thought a cow had made its way into your kitchen.
It does sound a bit like a cowbell.
And it was a cowbell.
So, Bath were finding a way to get around the sort of Exeter defence. They were sort of bypassing the 13 channel, long passes. And that worked for about 20 minutes until Exeter sort of really started rushing in to where the passes were coming from. And then passes started to go to ground and got thrown behind people. So, again, it was sort of Baxter kind of thinking on his feet that kind of turned the game around. They had the two... Are they both South Africans?
Who, Exeter?
Yeah,
back. Oh, Kirsten and... Vermeulen started, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then Kirsten came off the bench. I think he's been injured for a fair few weeks, Janis Kirsten. But his physicality... came on, that seemed to coincide with A, Underhill going off, but also Exeter really putting their foot down. And he and Vermeulen, along with Dave Ewers and Sam Skinner, literally grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck.
And I thought Devoto had a good game as well.
He's Exeter. A good player, mate. I think he's pretty underrated. And as far as 12s go, you know, when speaking from a slight position of bias, but when you've got Owen Farrell playing the way that Owen Farrell is playing, Ollie Devoto is very much the hybrid straight running 12, can do a bit of a hard running job if you need him to, but he's also got that distribution piece as well.
Yeah, he can run hard and straight, but like you say, he's got a boot and he's also got, you know, good hands. So Eddie's used him very briefly and then not gone back to him. I think he'd definitely be worth a shot. The person I really want to talk about is Tom de Glanville, though. I thought he was fantastic. In the air, like, he comes for everything. Like, and he was going through people. Some of them he didn't have much chance of getting to, but he was still just trying to catch everything, and everything he got to, he caught. And he's quite an elusive runner. He's not very big, but he's quite elusive. He's quite hard to put down. And I was really impressed by him. He's been good every time I've seen him, but, you know, it was, you know, there was no Watson. So he was, you know, put almost sort of center stage there in the back three. And you know, that, even through to the end, he was still playing really well.
That's what you want from your fullback, isn't it? It's almost like the commanding presence. If you're going to
very commanding.
If you're going to be near it, come and get it, own it, and deal with it. I think a lot of the time when you see fullbacks that aren't playing well or aren't confident, that's when they kind of wait for that ball. Yeah. They wait for it to drop, and they wait for it to come to them rather than going to own the situation almost, aren't you? Mike Brown used to be very, very good at that. It was his ball and he was coming to get it. And, you know, I saw, you know, a little bit of that in Tom de Glanville on Saturday.
Yeah, he was excellent. But, you know, it was a little bit like the semi-final last year where Bath kind of held it together for 50 minutes to an hour and then were just sort of grounded to the turf, basically. And Exeter sort of made hay in the last 10-15 minutes. But for an hour, it was a good contest that was quite enjoyable to watch. And there wasn't a lot of penalties either. Tom Dunn played really well, and so did Innard.
Impressed with Innard.
Yeah. It was one of the games I've enjoyed more this season, I think.
Yeah, I've been impressed with Will Muir, the sevens guy. He looks, he's just quite ungainly, isn't he?
Yeah. Someone said on Twitter he looked like he was coming in from the sight screen.
off the long run.
That's quality.
Yeah.
He's just he's all legs, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like, just rangy. Like he's galloping.
Yeah, I mean, he's a sevens player, isn't he? Like McConaughey. So they've both got a couple of rough edges, I think. But, you know, they do make things happen.
I mean, McConaughey went to a World Cup I mean, let's not forget that. I still find it no slight on McConaughey because I think he's excellent. I just think the fact that he went to a World Cup and has never been seen anywhere near an England shirt since is fucking unfathomable.
He's not one of the chosen ones, is he?
No, he's obviously not noshing off any jokes.
I mean, Lewis Ludlam.
Yeah. I mean,
he's brilliant until he went off at the weekend. And
I didn't want to take this down an Eddie Jones route, but fucking hell, you know. Just is baffling, isn't it? Baffling. I think he played one game in that World Cup against the USA, maybe?
Yeah.
Or did he play against Tonga? And either way, yeah. Anyway. But for Bath, it's not all doom and gloom for Bath, is it? I think they start getting people back. The likes of Jonathan Joseph, that Schumann, Tian Schumann looks like a good acquisition and links up well with Rhys Priestland as well. And I think
if you can get through a 6 week stretch where you can play Mercer, Faletau and Underhill, then you're in with a chance. And, you know, they were trying to use Faletau wide, which was they were using long passes to him a lot, and they were getting a lot of success out of it to cut that off. And, you know, not every team is going to be as well coached and as quick off the mark to stop tactics like that. I thought actually the first half and maybe a little bit of the second half that they'd probably be quite pleased with it.
Yeah. Ideal. Doug, you were actually at the Rico for Wasps. Yep. Against Costa. A bit of a more contentious red card in this game. I've seen it quite a few times. I've seen lots of stuff said about it. But the general consensus is that literally everybody other than Matt Carley and the touch judge who stood next to him thought it wasn't
the touch
a red
judge
card.
Wasn't interested either, to be honest. Oh. I don't think they wanted to be seen to be overruling him, especially on something as prickly as head clashes, because I think there's this concerted effort to present a unified front across all platforms. So if you're the assistant referee, you don't want to be the person that's saying no and that's sending off because there's a head clash involved. The truth of the matter is the only person that wanted that sending off to happen was Matt Carley, and he went looking for it, and it was done entirely outcome based. Had Ollie Thorley not have had to go off for a split head, that would have been carry on. If Ollie Thorley was sent off for a head-to-head clash with a player, why wasn't the Wasps winger taken off for an HIA?
Good question.
Same. So to bring it to a wider point, Nick Ezekwe got taken off for an HIA. And Lewis Ludlam got taken off for an HIA at Harlequins. Our best two players, essentially. Northampton's best two players. Nick Ezekwes was a forearm to the face. But because he was on the blind side of the referee and shielded from the touch judge, it wasn't looked at. If we're going to say that this is to protect players and to be a sort of player welfare based situation, then should anyone go off for an HIA, then the reason they've gone off for an HIA should be investigated. Otherwise, it's all puff.
Yeah.
And if somebody's sent off for hitting somebody in the head, the person they hit should go off as well.
Yeah, for a HIA.
Yeah.
If
you're sending the player
in
off
the framework
for somebody
to
the head to protect the player that's been hit in the head, then make sure he's not suffering the causes from that hit to the head.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
You think it would be automatic and would stand to reason, wouldn't you?
We're sending off Ollie Thorley But the player he's supposedly just caused physical harm to is just, yeah, you're fine, mate. Don't worry, you're not bleeding. You don't have to go off.
Who was it? Josh Bassett?
I think so, yeah. I mean, the Nick Kazikwe one was terrible. I remember I saw it. On my camera, I saw Kazikwe get a forearm to the face and thought, that doesn't look... But nobody saw... No, like, unless the TMO is looking directly at my camera when that happens, I'm pretty sure I'd be the only camera that would have seen it. I'm pretty sure I was the only... None of the officials could have seen it based on their sight lines. So what are we doing here? You know, is it outcome based, in which case it's nonsense? Is it only taken into account when it's clear and obvious, in which case it's a nonsense, because players are going off their HIAs all over the field all the time and nothing's ever looked at? And don't for a second, lastly on this, don't for a second tell me this is player-led. It's absolutely not player-led. I know that. You know that. The players have just been, in my opinion, directed to toe the line, because it's essentially just about avoiding or presenting a case for when this strikes court that this isn't going to be... We've taken steps to mitigate it.
Just get them to sign a disclaimer and be done with it.
Jack Noel tweeted, didn't he? Like a shocked eyes.
Yeah.
You know. So
Have you both seen it?
The incident. Yeah.
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 Have you ever seen a more ludicrous decision on any sporting?
It just can't. You can't be red carding people for that.
You know, it reminded me of there was one last, it might have been last season or earlier this season, with Elliot Stook, Bath, on the touchline. And it was very much a similar thing. It was an upright tackle, almost chest-on-chest contact. But during the chest-on-chest contact, there was a clash of heads. And it was a similar situation. But
Doug used the right phrase, window dressing, because... We've said it before, we'll say it again. You can get a head injury in rugby doing anything. You can get a head injury with your head 8 inches above the floor because you've fallen over and you've hit someone's knee. Or if you make a low tackle, but you hit their hip with your head, you can get a concussion. So the actual best way to reduce concussions would be to reduce the number of games. But they're not going to do that because that would cost money. So how committed are they to reducing head injuries? Enough to get the referees to send players off, but not enough to actually cost themselves a little bit of money by playing less games. I mean, is anyone going to miss a team playing for third and fourth place in a European Cup group?
I might, because I won't get paid.
But they'd be better off taking the European Cup, put the two European Cups together and have them as a straight knockout.
Just make it one big competition. Just go, wow, you know, get drawn or you get drawn against.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't like the FA Cup. Enjoy it.
Be brilliant. Exeter against Bucharest.
Yeah. Just everybody's in. Is another catchphrase. But you're right. Like, if it was all to do with player welfare, if it was all to do with looking after the players, then they would find a way to make them not play as much. I heard somebody go back to Saracens saying, oh, yeah, well, will the Saracens superstars be able to play for Saracens because... of like return to play because the number of games and internet. I'm like, well, hold on a minute. They've not played for fucking 6 months. They've played like five times in 6 months. It's not like they've been all over Europe and week in, week out. They should be able to come back and play straight away in the championship, shouldn't they? Like they haven't played any rugby. And like the looking forward to whatever they decide to do with the Lions this year. You know, is it in the realms of when people aren't traveling? You know, I think it's a great idea to travel around this country, or to do, you know, to have some kind of tour, or to make it happen in some way, shape or form. I would love it because I'm a rugby fan. But if they're that serious about the player welfare and stuff, why not just, you know, save it? Like 4 years, to, you know, you don't need an extra 7 or 8 games for the Lions for 40 people or however many is. Like, let's just knock it on the head. You know, we'll get through this summer, we'll get through this season, and then next season, when everyone's had a nice little jab in their arm, we can come back and start playing again. Well, in September.
I mean, really, last season, did they need to finish it? Other than contracts, you know, they did need to finish it. Obviously, I'd imagine BT wouldn't have been very happy if they didn't. But if, you know, if they could have changed that season up somehow, they could have reduced the number of games, or taken the semi-finals out of it, maybe, or whatever they wanted to do. But there was no chance of that. But, you know, Thorley doesn't bend down quite enough. He gets sent off.
Yeah. And not only that. So here's the next thing that I find fucking mental about this whole red card situation is, so Thorley mistimes a tackle according to the laws of the game, gets sent off, but now has to serve a 3-week ban. So his team were disadvantaged for that period of time, and he's now got to sit around for 3 weeks and think about his actions.
Well, and also don't forget, the worst thing I've seen this season was one of the Sale brothers,
the Priya South brothers,
when he hit Harris, but because of like the framework, it was an obvious cheap shot, but the ref followed the framework, which meant it was a penalty only. Whereas you're getting pure accidents, they follow the framework and they have to send them off.
Yeah, and then they sit on the sidelines for 3 weeks. Yeah, that's the bit I don't get. You know, you're entering a ruck. You've got it slightly wrong. You've caught him in the head. The sending off should be punishment enough. You know, you're disadvantaging your team for however many things, and then you have to sit on the sidelines for another 3 weeks. It's fucking mental.
Have played enough rugby.
There's no scope for use of saying that is a rugby incident.
Yeah.
No
rugby incidents have now fallen by the wayside, haven't they? It's just.
Yeah. I mean, and it was rightly pointed out on Twitter as well. Like, if he goes too low, he gets the chance for a red card. Because to go low, you can't be aware of where the player is. So if you go low and you time it wrong, red card. Go high, bang heads, red card. So you've now got players that are, you know, going to be chasing high balls up to a player and then aiming for a patch of their body about 4 inches big that's safe. I don't see what the answer is, you know, and well done to all the concussion crusaders. You've done this to rugby. No one else.
But they won't
all rest at their door.
Because they'll be saying, well, the players want it. They don't.
Well, they don't. I'm telling you now. That's what they'll say. They do not want it. It is not player-led.
That, ladies and gentlemen, and is facts.
And it's a shame because Gloucester, we were all talking about that, but Gloucester actually played really well. They look decent. Good. I like the look of their new 10 as well. He seems like a decent player. He's certainly rating more than I do Lloyd Evans.
Who was that?
Academy lad. I can't even remember his name.
Barton.
He was that good.
George Barton. Not George Barton.
I thought he looked really good. I really did. Again, it's a parity thing. How close, you know, in the NFL every year, there's a team that loses 9 or 10 games by less than a field goal, and they finish 4-11 or 4-12 or 5-11. That's Gloucester this year. They've lost a lot of games very narrowly, and they're bottom of the league, or one off the bottom. I don't think they're as bad as their record.
They've had that. That where Gloucester have struggled is having that consistent presence at 10. I think 36 has stepped in and done a job, but he'll put you in good positions kicking, but like a little bit of flair when it's needed is where they may have lacked a little bit. And they've got good good players. They've got a good pack. You know, as I say, teams are capable of beating each other. And when you're on the wrong end of those small point score lines, it can dent your confidence a little bit. Talking of score lines, Doug, Harlequins versus Northampton on Sunday.
Do we have to?
Well, we can briefly because we're nearly at an hour, so we can make this brief if you want.
Okay. I don't know where to start, really. We've sorted out one area of our team and then gone backwards in another. We can't defend now. We can scrum and we can fling the ball about, but I mean, it was a super rugby match, wasn't it? And I mean, let's be honest. If you want people to come and watch games of rugby, that's the kind of game they need to come and watch. Certainly the first half. Second half was dire, but primarily I think that was because everyone was goosed. Absolutely goosed.
Because they've been legging it about.
Yeah.
Stop 40.
Yeah. I mean, poor Aaron Painter in the second half looked like he was going to, like his lungs were going to fall out of his ass. I've never seen anything like it. That's what you want. But the attack and the defence are styled around offensive players, Nick Evans and Sam Vesti. And if you want to go that far up to Chris Boyd. So very Southern Hemisphere, fling it around, be creative. That's going to lead to holes. And to be honest, I'd much rather that than Sale and Exeter. If you give me 80 minutes of that Quinn's Saints match, I think I'd be interested. Because there's still enough competition, and a lot of the breaks and a lot of the running around was caused by good jackaling and good turnovers, you know, pressure. I don't know where Saints go, really. It would be good to get bigger back, for sure. We're playing with a bloke who's played 5 games at 10 in his life, you know.
Yeah, Furbank.
And all because Eddie Jones says that he should play there. Oh, out of nowhere. Yeah. Like, if you're George Furbank, why are you even entertaining that thought when you've got Elliot Daly at fullback for England? If you can't beat Elliot Daly out of fullback, you're certainly not going to beat out Owen Farrell or George Ford at 10. Well, what's he thinking?
Is that what's happened, is it?
Eddie Jones led said that he sees him as a 10.
He needs to fuck off, doesn't he?
Yeah. It's not really affecting Saints too badly because we've found this other young lad that plays fullback who's brilliant.
Freeman.
And he's very, very good. And I could see Slightholm playing fullback as well. I think he'd be an interesting proposition at fullback, but we're shoehorning in this lad at 10 when I don't think he is a 10, and we could possibly be playing Malinder there, who I think would be a more stable influence at 10 than he is at wherever he comes on and plays.
Utility back.
Yeah.
Did it make a big difference losing Piers Francis? You think Furbank with Francis at 12 has a little bit of a security blanket?
You boys know what I feel about Piers Francis. I think he's one of the best 10s in the country, 12s in the country, and is criminally undervalued in English rugby. I think he's a brilliant, brilliant player. And defensively, I think a lot of our backs especially are marshalled by him when in defence. I think he does a lot of that communication and organisation.
Because you ended up on Sunday with a very kind of inexperienced back line, didn't you?
Yeah.
Like without Francis in there to marshal it, then all that late withdrawal kind of scuppered them a bit.
Saints can be the most frustrating thing about watching Saints is when they're chasing the game, it becomes very hard to watch because they force stuff and the offloads don't go to hand and they knock on, and very frustrating to watch at times.
That was the whole problem. A lot of people did enjoy this game, but I can't say I did. It seemed from the start both sides were trying to like pull magic offloads from everywhere. The ball was on the floor so often, and it was easy to make ground. All you had to do was string three or four passes together, and then there was space out wide. And
it's all about the skills, bro.
So there was no pattern to the game at all. It was I'd lost interest after about 20 minutes, I must admit. But all I'd say from the game is it's just Smith just shines off the screen. Just everything he does is class.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's absolute class. Unfortunately, he's going to get nowhere near the England side because he's not ready.
It's so fucked.
He's so much better than Ford or Farrell at 10. It's not even a joke. If he was playing in New Zealand, he'd be in their side. If he was Irish, he'd be in their side. If he was French, he'd be in their side. Fuck Scotland and France, Scotland and Wales, he'd probably already have 50 caps. You know, he's going to be wasted. If he's not in that side soon, he'll lose interest and it'll go the same way as Cipriani.
Yeah. Well, if that's the case, he'll end up in France sooner rather than later, making some big bucks, won't he? And just,
we'll have lost it forever.
Yeah. It's such a shame. Like Don Brandt is another one that obviously doesn't fit the mold, but
I'm still not convinced on Don Brandt. I think Simmons is better.
Personally. I think Simmons is a better rugby player than Alex Don Brandt. But Alex Don Brandt does make things happen. And I think if we're going to talk, obviously, size, Don Brandt offers more of a physical presence. But Don Brandt doesn't seem to win that many turnovers. You know, he carries hard. He finds gaps. He appears in random places, but he doesn't. It's hard to explain.
He's got a good rugby brain. He's got good hands. But he's not a. He's not like an all-court player like say Simmons or Curry would be. They were talking about Simmons again after the Bath game, and the only issue I think with Simmons is if he plays at eight, you've got to change back row completely. So I don't think you could go with Simmons, Underhill and Curry.
Yeah, the whole thing feels a bit lightweight in that.
You need a bigger six then. And
I just don't agree. I'm sorry.
I don't know where you would find that.
Well, you just adapt your game plan, don't you? But if you can use different players to carry in different areas. I think if you've got three dynamic back row players,
they're only dynamic?
I'm not saying they're only dynamic. I'm saying that their greatest attribute is the dynamism.
Yeah, but we're saying that you can't have three dynamic players. Back row players because you need one unit. I don't understand it.
You can be a unit and dynamic as well, but at the end of the day, you do need someone to bulldoze the odd yard when there's nothing else on.
Well, I think Tom Curry gives you that. I think Sam Underhill gives you that. I think Sam Simmons gives you that.
I'm not
it's
sure
not always a running straight, is it? If you can run it a soft shoulder or you know have that last minute step, you can then give yourself that yard that somebody running straight into somebody else would do, wouldn't you?
But at the moment, England haven't got it in the centres either.
So one of the things I think is largely overlooked about carrying is that force is mass times acceleration, right?
Something like that.
Something like that. Billy Vunipola doesn't run as fast as Tom Curry. Tom Curry's 20 kilograms lighter, but I guarantee you Tom Curry running at full speed, the impact is as hard as Billy Vunipola because of the speed he's moving at.
Yeah, I suppose if you're going to use...
It's always just boiled down to, well, Billy's 20 kilograms heavier, so he's a better carrier, which I don't think is true. Especially now, I think Billy's nowhere near the carrier he was. So I'm not sure it's a valid argument. I think you could... I'd love to see it back. The fact is, we haven't seen it. We haven't seen a Curry, Underhill, Simmons back row.
That's true. And we're not likely to either.
Because the rhetoric is they're not big enough as a three.
Yeah, maybe it's time to move on from size. Do so. If Eddie's thing is, Eddie prides himself on being, you know, of this someone radical thinker.
Well, see, what I don't understand, isn't it? What I don't understand and probably don't appreciate is how much of an influence the extra weight of a back row helps in the scrum. I mean, how much are they actually helping with the pushing?
Yeah, we could.
But is that weight or is that strength? You know, you can still be strong and push in the scrum. How much of that is weight related?
Well, I don't know. I'm reliably informed that's why England miss Launchbury so much, is because in the scrum he's like a excellent pusher. So, you know, that all makes a difference as well. It's, you know, not always the biggest second row that makes the most difference. So, yeah, we're probably out of our expertise.
Out of our wheelhouse here.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it is the return of the Six Nations this week. So who knows what fucking shithousery Eddie Jones has got up his sleeve this week. I'm going to suggest absolutely nothing. And it's probably the same team that played against Wales.
Skinner's got into the Scotland squad, hasn't he?
Sam Skinner's in the Scotland squad yet. He's an excellent player. I like to watch him. But yeah, who knows what England are going to do. But if they... It's just like Eddie Jones and England to pull out a performance this weekend, isn't it? You've lost to Wales, you've lost to Scotland, you're playing against France. Everyone's expecting you to get pumped against this French team who's, you know, got all of the pieces and it's looking fantastic. And it was just so incredibly Eddie Jones to win this match on Saturday, isn't it? And turn around and go, well, yeah, see, I told you, my plan is the right plan. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Any other business for you two? Ben, anything you want to get off your chest?
No, not really. Oh, no.
Thanks for
coming. Local Facebook groups.
Yeah, they're classic, aren't they? Love them.
Oh, man. If anyone could post something in them that isn't about dogs, that'd be fantastic.
They are comedy gold. You just got to find the odd post and then put in a Partridge quote and see what happens. I did one of those the other week, and there was somebody talking about I can't remember. Was it a fence they were talking about, Doug? I said, I think I mentioned it on the long leg or on another podcast that we did, and I quoted the Partridge Joni Mitchell line.
Yeah,
and it just fitted in perfectly. Just. Absolutely. It's lovely. Lovely stuff.
Lovely stuff.
Doug?
Any other business?
Yeah.
Not really. I'd love to be a divorce solicitor. Fuck, they can make some money.
Qualifications required?
Sorry?
Qualifications required?
I mean, I imagine there's a few. Just a guess, but sure.
Being Dick Turpin, one of them, I should imagine.
Was it you that told me the old Gary Glitter joke about that?
No.
The stand deliver one.
No, definitely not. That's not my joke. I can't.
No, it definitely was.
I can't remember the punch.
I'll remember it. I can't remember it.
Doug will tell that joke next week. Or maybe he won't. I just wanted to say a quick one. Like, while we're recording. No,
it's Adam Ant, not Gary Glitter. The old standard deliver one. He didn't know what was going on. He was adamant.
That sounds like one of my jokes.
It definitely was.
By one of my jokes, I mean shit. I at the time of recording on ITV tonight is the Harry Whale. Is it Harry Wales? Harry Windsor?
What's his name? We speak. Yeah.
And Meghan Markle interview with Oprah, who I did see somewhere. Somebody compared her to Ian Wright dressed as Mrs. Doubtfire. Which is incredible. and as I said that, Doug looked at the screen and he's just gone, yeah, I see it. So anyway, right.
That's unbelievable.
And earlier, like over the last week or so, that absolute humongous melt Piers Morgan on Good Morning Britain has been going after Meghan Markle and Harry and how they've been disowned in the country. And then snippets of the interview that I've seen where she's accused them of being, you know, the royal family of being racist and, you know, basically what if the child was mixed race and all that sort of stuff. And I mean, we all know who that racist guy is going to be, right? I'm pretty sure he's in hospital right now. But I find it incredible. I find it absolutely incredible that any family, like, I mean, the royal, I'm no royalist by any stretch of imagination. They are all fucking pointless amoebas as far as I'm concerned. But I find it incredible that they would stick up, defend Prince Andrew for all of his alleged indiscretions and basically disown Harry and Meghan for wanting to just live a relatively normal life. And I find it absolutely baffling how anyone can think that that's okay. And like, imagine you, like, your grandmother going, you know, I know your uncle's a paedophile, but, you know, he's my son and we'll sort it out. But you moved to America with your actress wife. Because she's not one of us, we're gonna cut you off, basically. And I think there's a lot of similarities to the whole Princess Diana thing. You speak up against the establishment and you find yourself ostracized.
What's weirder is you can kind of understand it from the family themselves, but the press seem to have made the same decision. They're like, we're not interested in Paedophile Island, but this woman, I mean, I'd imagine she probably is a bit of a knob. I mean,
yeah, 100%.
She's an actress from Hollywood, but not a particularly famous one. So she's probably quite like needy and annoying. But at the same time, she's not actually done a great deal wrong compared to certain other.
Yeah. And I find it madness that this alleged bullying claim by one of her aides from 2 years ago mysteriously just emerges a week before that this interview is due to go live. And the whole situation just fucking stinks. The whole thing stinks. You all right, Ben?
Yeah, I'm fine. Sorry. I've just seen something online, which I'll put in the chat, but you can't.
just seen something online. I mean, you're going to have to narrow that down, Ben. Oh, amazing. Very good. Picture of the Queen and a couple of horses.
Yeah.
There you go. Right. Well, that's the end anyway. That's all I wanted to talk about. I just think the royal family could all get in the sea, as far as I'm concerned.
Agreed.
There's no need for it anymore. They don't really offer anything. Oh, yeah, but what about the tourism? What about the sovereignty? Fuck off, mate.
Yeah.
It's an no institution. One's... It's an institution. Yeah, so's Broadmoor. Fuck off.
No one's going to turn down a visit.
Where did you hear that, Ross?
I made it up.
You came up with that on your own.
I did. That's mine.
You're not going to go up to an American and say, do you want to go and have a tour of Buckingham Palace? They're not going to turn around and say to you, ooh, is Prince Edward going to be there?
Yeah. Or is Prince Andrew going to be there?
Yeah.
You know. Oh, there you go. Right. That's enough of that. Let's reconvene next week. Six Nations. So we'll all be in a great mood come Monday. and we'll see you all next week. Go well.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Sports Social Podcast Network.